everybody. Welcome back to another episode of On The Mix. I'm your host, Lindsay. And today, we are going to be talking about the story of ska band Sublime and the death of their lead singer, Bradley Nowell. So, Sublime is a band that I think a lot of people know about. Maybe they're familiar with a couple of their hit songs like What I Got, Do In Time, etc., etc. Those are probably the most common ones. But I didn't really know a lot about their backstory and how actually pivotal they are in changing the landscape of music in the 90s back then and bringing ska into a new generation of people. And ska itself has a really interesting backstory that I thought I would share. Let me break down for you who Sublime are. So Sublime, in their earliest formation, is Bradley Nowell. He was the singer and the guitarist for the band. Then we have Eric Wilson, who is bass. And then we have Bud Gaw, who is on drums. I hope I said his name right. There's also a fourth member, who is Bradley's Dalmatian dog named Louie. You might have maybe seen a Dalmatian dog on some of Sublime's album covers or single covers. So Bradley purchased a Dalmatian puppy from an old man for $500 back in February of 1990 and named him Louie after his grandfather. So he was always nicknamed as Lou Dog or Louie. And he also would sometimes go on stage with Sublime when they were on tour. Those are the members of Sublime. But I wanted to dig deeper into learning about ska, because ska, I think, is one of those genres that you either appreciate or you don't even like at all. So what is ska? Ska originated in Jamaica in the late 1950s and was the predecessor of reggae. So this happened before reggae became what it's known as. Ska combined elements of Caribbean folk music with American jazz and R&B. So ska is a melting pot of different kind of flavors of music. Sublime was one of the most popular bands of what's known as third wave ska. So I looked deep into this. I'm like, what is third wave ska? I'm just aware of ska in general. So there is a historian, his name is Albino Brown, who is a ska historian, and he coined the term third wave ska in 1989. So most people believe that there are three types of ska, like three phases that happened, basically. Third wave ska originated with punk roots in the late 80s and became commercially successful in the 90s with bands like Sublime and No Doubt. Ska was separated into three periods. So there's the original origins in Jamaica during the 50s and 60s, and then there was the two-tone ska revival of the late 70s in England. So with bands like The Clash, for example, they kind of used some ska reggae influence with their punk roots. That's a very classic example. And then you have ska punk, which is the third wave of ska. So again, similar in vein to the second wave, which happened in England, but you add things like horns and other kinds of brass instruments, and you add a faster tempo, a bit of like punk edginess that kind of transformed in the 80s and 90s. And that's what you have with this third wave ska movement. I wonder if there will be a fourth wave of ska. I feel like ska is missing in the zeitgeist of what's happening right now in music. Like, there's a lot of pop happening. I feel like ska needs to come back. Or like modern reggae should also come back. Because ska is such a unique flavor profile that, again, you either appreciate it for what it is or you don't understand it and you don't really like it. So, but Sublime, I think, was more palatable for a lot of people that weren't maybe aware or familiar of ska, or they weren't fans of ska, because a lot of their music, I think, especially in the second and third album, is a lot more palatable. Like, there's more rock elements that made it popular on the charts that people could tolerate to listen to. But that's the backstory of ska. So now we're all understanding of what ska is and who Sublime are. Sublime was influenced by hip-hop artists such as N.W.A., Eazy-E, Beastie Boys, Public Enemy, Mobb Deep, and others. And Sublime is considered to be one of the most successful and powerfully moving ska punk bands of all time. So even those that don't know their music, their understanding of like, oh yeah, Sublime is a really popular, really big band, and they were huge in the 90s, and I think they still are relatively popular. And they had a resurgence, actually, which I will be talking about at the end. It all kind of comes together. But let's dive deep into who Sublime were and who Bradley was, because he's kind of the main focal point of the story. Bradley was born in Long Beach, California. As a child, he enjoyed surfing and sailing and would often participate in boat races. His mother recalled that he was a very emotional, very sensitive, very artistic boy, but he was needy. He was always testing just to see what he could get away with, she said. After his parents divorced when he was 10, his behavior worsened. His mother was originally awarded custody over Bradley and his sister, but found Bradley to be too difficult to control, and at the age of 10, he moved in full-time with his father. And it was here where his parents really shaped his sense of identity around music. His father introduced him to ska music. There was one day in the summer of 1979 when Bradley was 11, and he went with his father on a month-long sailing trip to the Virgin Islands, where he heard reggae for the first time. And this absolutely blew his mind that music could sound like this. Bradley just like soaked it all in like a sponge. And so he loved reggae and he was super influenced by reggae, which is interesting because his other bandmates, Bud and Eric, mostly came to the table with having their influences be classic rock based. But Bradley, when he eventually came into the band, he brought reggae on and he was trying to get everyone on to reggae. So he is the reason why Sublime is a ska band and not just another 90s rock band of the time. At the age of 16, he started his first band called Hogan's Heroes. I don't know if that's in reference to Hulk Hogan, but there you go, Hogan's Heroes, with his friends Michael Yates and Eric Wilson. So Eric is now coming into the picture. At first, Eric didn't like reggae. And Bradley recalled, "I was trying to get them to do the UB40's version of Cherry O' Baby, but it didn't work. They tried, but it just sounded like such garbage. We were horrible." Bradley attended the University of California, Santa Cruz, before transferring to California State University, Long Beach, to study finance, but he dropped out one semester shy of earning his degree. But it was at this time where he eventually moved in to Bud and Eric's band. Eric and Bud were actually childhood friends. Eric's father taught Bud how to read music and play the drums. Soon enough, the two boys would form their own band with future Sublime manager Michael Happelt, called the Juice Bros, during high school. But obviously Michael dropped out, Bradley came in, and that's where Sublime comes in. So for the next several years, the group played mostly at parties and small clubs throughout Southern California with other local ska bands such as Smokestacks, No Doubt, and the Skeletones. While they were popular in their very small town, most music venues were highly skeptical of booking them because of their extremely unique flavor profile merging of ska with punk. You know, most music venues weren't really keen on what Sublime was bringing to the table. So because they couldn't get booked, in response to this, they created their own music label called Skunk Records. Just hearing the fact that they were some record label's recording artist, they were like, oh, okay, so maybe they have some genuine potential here. So then they were finally taken a bit more seriously, and then they were able to book more shows. The band produced and distributed Sublime's early recordings on their label, later selling demo tapes at shows and local record stores. Michael Happold would come back into the picture, and he offered to let the band record in the studio at the school where he was studying without the school's knowledge. So they literally broke into the school when it was late at night, and they recorded from midnight to 7 in the morning. And then they would leave once everyone would come into school, basically. That recording session at this school resulted in the cassette tape Ja Won't Pay the Bills, released in 1991. And that tape helped the band gain more of a solidified following in Southern California. Because this method of sneaking into the school and using the equipment there worked really well for them with that tape, they utilized that method to record their debut album called 40 Ounces to Freedom. Bradley recalled, "You weren't supposed to be in there after 9 p.m., but we'd go in at 9:30 and stay until 5 in the morning. We'd just hide from the security guards. They never knew we were there. We managed to get 30,000 worth of studio time for free," which is crazy. 40 Ounces to Freedom was released in 1992. Initially being sold exclusively at their live shows, the album became widely known in LA after rock radio station KROQ began playing their song Date Rape, which initially sold 60,000 copies upon its release. So Date Rape was the song that really kind of helped to propel them further into the limelight. It's an interesting song. It is a song that is pretty topical of the time, where it is about a woman that is date raped, and just Bradley's kind of thoughts on sexual assault being so rampant at that time. So he was making a statement, and I commend him for making that statement and for being an ally to fellow women that are often date raped or drugged at bars or parties. So he really was making a statement. Despite their growing popularity in Southern California, Sublime was still not signed with a major label. They had Skunk Records, but that was their own label. They wanted, obviously, a major label for wider distribution. Around this time, Bradley teamed up with Gwen Stefani of No Doubt to record the song Saw Red. The song was eventually released on Sublime's Robin the Hood album, which was self-recorded on a four-track cassette and was released in October of 1994. So eventually, they were picked up in June of 1994 by MCA Records, and they picked up 40 Ounces to Freedom for national distribution. And because of this, Sublime was scheduled to tour throughout Europe for the first time. So this was exciting. Bradley was highly interested in European history, and when he knew that they were going to tour throughout Europe, he was studying all about the different kinds of European history, which I thought is really, really, really cool. So eventually, in February of 1996, Sublime returned to the studio to record the bulk of their self-titled album, which would be their debut with MCA Records. Production was done by Paul Leary of the popular 90s band Butthole Surfers. He also was the producer of Marcy Playground and the Meat Puppets. And they recorded this at Willie Nelson's studio in Austin, Texas. So they released Robin the Hood in 1994, and it was a commercial failure, but this helped to propel them and make their third album a lot better. The band did tour extensively through 94 to 95, their popularity increasing gradually as their single Date Rape began playing on the radio. They were really trying to make a name for themselves here, and the sad thing was their third album would be that commercial success. Their first album was like moderately okay. For a debut album to get 60,000 copies upon its release was pretty okay, especially considering they didn't have a major label to help with distribution. The second album being kind of a somewhat commercial failure, not selling nearly as much. Unfortunate, but their third album would prove to be that kind of piece de resistance that they were looking for. However, it was at this time where Bradley began his downfall with drugs. It sort of started in 1995 when the band co-headlined Vans Warped Tour. I don't even know if Warped Tour is still happening. It's akin to a Coachella, but they co-headlined Warped Tour in 1995, and they were eventually asked to leave for a week due to disruptive behavior by them and his dog biting four different people. Bud reflected on this experience at Warped Tour. Basically, our daily regimen was wake up, drink, drink more, play, and then drink a lot more. We'd call people names. Nobody got our sense of humor. Then we brought the dog out and he bit a few skaters, and that was the last straw. So as Sublime was kind of getting a little bit more popular and they were going on tour, Bradley started dabbling with drugs. And it was also when he was on tour that he began dating this woman, Troy Dedeker. I hope I said her name correctly. In 1994, October, Troy became pregnant, gave birth to a son, Jacob Noel, on June 25th, 1995. Eventually, him having a son and him having Troy and also Sublime gaining a bit of popularity, that unfortunately did not stop him from wanting to dabble in heroin. And according to his father, he said his excuse for taking the heroin was that he felt like he had to be larger than life. He was leading the band, leading his fans, and he had to put on this persona. He heard a lot of musicians say they were taking heroin to be more creative. Well, unfortunately, heroin is one of the most corrosive drugs you could take. With his increasing drug use, you hear a lot of that kind of talk about his insight to his drug habit on a lot of Sublime songs, and he doesn't necessarily shy away from it. Heroin was kind of the drug of choice for a lot of these musicians. And unfortunately, once you're hooked, though, you kind of can't stop. It's just like a snowball effect. It gets worse and worse and worse. After Warped Tour, the band was pressured to begin producing their third album. In February of 1996, they began recording this album. It would be known as their self-titled album, but it was originally called Killin' It. On May 18th, 1996, Bradley and his girlfriend Troy married in a Hawaiian-themed ceremony in Las Vegas. So this was after they wrapped recording their third album. He married his girlfriend and he was over the moon. And now that they were finished recording what would be their third album and their most commercially successful album still to this day of all time, they went on a 5-day tour throughout Northern California. And then that was supposed to be followed by a European tour and an East Coast tour. So they were really trying to hype up this album. May 24th, 1996 marked the last show that they would ever do in Petaluma, California. Their friend, Todd Zalkins, was visiting them on tour and was there during this concert on May 24th. And Todd, I looked briefly into who Todd was. He has a book on recovering an addiction because he had a massive opiate addiction before the death of his friend Bradley. And then afterwards, he fell in deeper. So he kind of goes around doing inspirational, motivational speeches, and he helps people that are dealing with addiction to get into recovery. So, you know, at this time, he was, you know, into drugs like they all were. But he was there that night, and he gives this account on what happened that day. I drove up to San Francisco to see my friends from Sublime play a string of shows prior to the beginning of their first European tour. A bunch of us were in Petaluma to see Brad, Eric, and Bud play 2+ hours. We had been partying all day and into the evening before the show. I was already 6 years deep into my prescription painkiller addiction, which began as a result of a lower back surgery in 1990. I had rented one of those huge Lincoln Town cars, and after the gig that night, the members of Sublime crammed into the, quote, mafia mobile. All of us spent the car ride in a haze. Brad had his head on my shoulder, almost asleep, mumbling, "I miss my wife and my son." He repeated those words a few times, but it was enough that I'll never forget it. Blaine dropped off the band members at their hotel and drove me and my buddy Pat Conlon back to his house so we could sleep it off. So that was part of Todd's memory of this night. I'm going to go back into giving more, but Bud also remembers this night, and he plays a major part in what happened with Bradley. So Bud recalled on his website, "Sublime played a show in Chino, California, where the promoter offered us a veritable smorgasbord of every drug under the sun. Brad came to me and said he wanted to, quote, party just one more time. I told Brad it wasn't worth it. But after our show in Petaluma, Brad and I got a hotel room on the beach outside of San Francisco. Brad tried to convince me we had all the reasons to party and it was worth celebrating. We owe it to ourselves," I can remember him telling me. "It was 2 a.m. and I declined, falling asleep. Brad left to go walk on the beach with Lou Dog. When I woke up the next morning, I saw my best friend, naked, lying on the bed with his feet on the floor. I remember laughing, thinking he had gotten so drunk the night before he couldn't make it into the bed. But when I got no response from him, I got up to see what was going on. And that's when the world came to a screeching halt. I tried to resuscitate him, but he had been dead for hours. I began crying out loud for help, ran downstairs and down the road looking for the rest of the guys. This was the worst news I had ever had to deliver in my life. After being interviewed by the police, I was told by the EMTs that he had been gone for hours and there was nothing I could do. This was the longest bus ride of all our lives." So the last anyone had heard from Bradley was their friend Todd, whom Bradley called at 4 a.m., but Todd didn't take the call. Todd would say, "Later that night at about 4 a.m., Brad called Blaine's house to speak to me. I was in one of the guest rooms and unable to take the call. The following morning, we awoke to discover the tragic news. Our friend and brother Bradley James Noel had died of a heroin overdose in his hotel room. As my grief enveloped me, I was obsessed about not being able to take my friend's 4 a.m. phone call. What could I have possibly done to change things? Could I have possibly helped reverse the outcome? What did he want to say?" So Bradley was found dead officially by Bud at 11:30 in the morning of a heroin overdose. But when he found him, he was obviously dead for hours. So his time of death, it's hard to tell really, but obviously very early in the morning. If he phoned his friend Todd at 4 in the morning, Then somewhere between 4 a.m. and 11:30 in the morning, he passed away. Unfortunately, nothing could have really helped Bradley because Bradley seemed to want to party, you know, and take drugs. And unfortunately, he might have taken just too much accidentally. One of the saddest things, too, was the dog was curled up by his feet on the bed crying when Bud found him. So Lou Dog was involved in all of this. But following his death, Lou Dog was cared for by their manager, Michael, until Lou Dog died of old age on September 17th, 2001, which is very sad. But he lived a long life. But it was only 1 week after he had gotten married that he died. And it was 2 months before their third album would release that he passed away. So their final album was released on July 30th, 1996. So only a couple months after. The original title of the album was Killin' It. I think maybe after Brad died, they found that a bit too eerily distasteful and just an eerie coincidence. So they replaced that with just their name, Sublime. Some fans were not aware of Bradley's death when the album became a huge success, including the single What I Got, which peaked at number one on the modern rock chart. In addition to What I Got, the album included several other singles, including Santeria, Do in Time, Wrong Way, and April 29th, 1992, Miami, all of which received heavy airplay. So when I looked into this episode, I had no idea that that was Bradley's last album, and it was kind of a posthumous album. So it's really crazy. It gives those songs a whole different kind of meaning when you listen to them now and realize he died not long after recording those songs. And I think that just puts things into a really, really heavy, different perspective. Bradley was eventually cremated, and his ashes were spread over his favorite surfing spot in Surfside, California. In October 1997, his widow Troy and Hole singer Courtney Love collaborated with the advocacy group Partnership for a Drug-Free America on a series of public service announcements for TV, which was intended to de-glamorize drug use and help to disassociate it from the music industry. That's really ironic, you know, considering who Courtney Love is and who her husband was. Yeah, I think that's really crazy. And I think considering that drug use and the music industry go hand in hand, that's kind of hard to kind of disassociate the two from each other. They go hand in hand pretty well together. But to deglamorize it, it makes a lot of sense because that's kind of mostly why Bradley wanted to do it, was he heard a lot of musicians take heroin to kind of make them more creative, and he saw it as like, if I just take this, I could maybe get more creative with my musical ideas. And obviously that led him down a really dark path, you know, and unfortunately, you know, the love of his son and his, you know, wife wasn't enough necessarily to stop his drug habit. Eric and Bud decided that there was no Sublime without Bradley, as most bands do. It's like there's no Nirvana without Kurt Cobain. So Eric and Bud went on to form the Long Beach Dub All-Stars. That was for a brief period of time. Bud also played in a short-lived supergroup called Eyes Adrift with Kurt Novoselic of Nirvana and Meat Puppets Kurt Kirkwood. But ever since then, they really weren't fully back with Sublime. Here and there, I think they did, you know, little concerts, but they didn't do a whole lot. It wasn't until recently, though, that they asked Bradley's son, Jacob, to be the new frontman for Sublime. And they headed into Coachella this year. That's when I became more aware of the fact that Bradley was no longer in Sublime, because I was not aware that Bradley had passed away. Because I wasn't, like, super into Sublime, honestly. I liked their music, but I wasn't really deep into, like, the lore of Sublime. So when I saw that, Sublime is headlining Coachella with his son, I thought, oh, that's so interesting. How come? It's kind of like oddly beautiful that that happened, you know? And they asked Jacob a lot, actually, to headline Sublime, but Jacob was like, no, this is my father's band. You know, he wasn't really sure if that's what he kind of wanted to do. And I get it, you know, to step into your father's band and be the front man and to almost replace him, I can see how that could seem wrong. Also, Jacob went into his own drug and alcohol addiction problem, you know, obviously, I think to cope with the loss of his father and deal with everything that he had gone through in his life. In a really interesting turn of events, Bradley's friend Todd that I talked about in this episode, he got sober and he helped Jacob when it was time for Jacob to go to treatment. And Jacob is now sober because of Todd's intervention. So I think that's a really, really really like humbling end to this story. Jacob had this to say, though, about fronting the band. He said, "I call Bud and Eric my uncles, and I'm happy they've accepted me into their band. I'll never look at it as my band. Sublime is my dad's band, and I'm helping out, that's all." So very sweet. I believe Jacob is maybe 27, 28 years old, but he looks just like his dad. When you see him headlining Coachella with them, he looks just like his dad. And he actually played the same guitar that Bradley had. A really interesting kind of like full circle moment. I think Bradley would be happy that his son came in and stepped in to kind of bring Sublime back, because I think a lot of people, especially like Gen Zs and younger people, they need to know about Sublime. Sublime was really the it band back in the 90s, in like the mid late 90s. You know, Nirvana had their time, but then like when the late 90s was converging into something else away from grunge and into more, again, of this flavorful kind of like ska, punky, post-grungy type of energy space, Sublime really became that band, and more people need to hear their story. And I am so grateful that I researched them, because I'll be giving Sublime even more of a thorough listen than I ever did before. So I hope that you guys took that away too from this episode. So thank you guys for listening. I hope that you guys enjoyed and that you learned something today that you hadn't known about before. And I will see you guys very soon with another episode of On The Mix. Please enjoy listening to Sublime if you haven't heard of them before, or if you want to listen to them more. Also, if you would like to follow me on social media, I have a Instagram for On The Mix podcast. And if you would like to monetarily support me, there's links down below in the description where if you'd like to support the podcast, that would be excellent, but no pressure. But thank you for listening. I hope you guys enjoyed, and I will see you guys next time with another episode of On The Mix. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye, guys.